Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
When Mary Ann Griffin Beckman was 9 years old, her 7-year-old brother Dan was hit by a car and killed. From that moment on, every instance in her life, every moment shared with her father, every conversation with her mother had been shaped by the tragedy, every single one. Mary Ann's book, When I Was 9 Years Old, A Love Story, is framed by a gentle look back at family life in the 1950s through the 1970s. And Mary Ann Griffin Beckman, author of When I Was 9 Years Old, A Love Story, is with us on This Week in America. Hi, Mary Ann. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Really love what you've done with this book on so many levels and looking forward to our conversation today. Let's first of all start off by writing the book, and it took you a while to get the book together. Talk about why it took so long to get this book published as it is now, When I Was 9 Years Old.
Well, my mother died, and it was very, very shortly after when I found out that my brother, the one that's still, there are two still here, but Kevin, didn't remember him at all. And he was very young. I mean, it's, you know, I have a feeling that it's probably as much emotional as it was because he was so little.
Yes.
But that's when I realized that it was just me now. And I've had an ongoing relationship with my brother, Dan. I know some people believe in that and some don't. Since I lost him before that, you know, and I started to write it because I wanted there to be something concrete about him. I didn't want him forgotten.
How difficult was it? I'm sorry, finish that thought.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, how difficult was it for you to go back and to do that? It sounds like you pretty much, these vivid details have been with you for all of your life, but to go back and to piece them all together, to recount them. Was that difficult to do?
You know, I have a shockingly good memory, and this was so traumatic that you really only have two choices. One is to completely forget it, or one is to always remember it. And I felt it was my family responsibility to always remember. And plus, we were very, very close. I mean, it was just he and I. Kevin was very little, so it was a different relationship. And I will tell you, I mean, I started it. There were days when I sobbed for days. I really did. It was a very vivid thing for me where I'd have to stop and just walk away from it. And I think I also put in my book, and I'm sure it's on the webpage, I have a son. He's 33 now, and he's a person with special needs, but he's very, very high functioning, very verbal, very smart. And I needed to step away because I didn't have anything to give to him. It was taking so much out of me. So that's what I would do. I would step away until one day I'd think, let me put that in the book. And then I'd go back into it. And the things that rescued me, I want to tell you, were the stories about my father. I mean, he was such a pistol. He really was. And there were so many things that he did that were so funny that I was really glad I could recall most of them and put them in there. I like to think that's a good break because the other stuff is heartbreaking.
Well, yes, it's touching people on so many different levels. As you mentioned, you've got the story of the relationship. You've got the lighter moments with family. How important was that, your dad being a pistol, to help you get through all of this? Was that beneficial, his personality? Did that help you deal with your grief maybe a little bit better?
No, my father never got over it. He was crushed and devastated. If my mother hadn't been as strong as she was, I'm sure we would have been farmed out and things would have been bad. I mean, it just broke my father. It really, really did. What actually saved us all, and my mother was right about this too, was we moved. You know, I walked out that front door every day and saw him laying on the ground.
Oh, yes.
You know, so, I mean, she was right. And I never verbalized it. I mean, it wasn't a topic of conversation ever. But she saw it and she recognized it. And he died in 64. We moved in 68. So, and moving, I think, is really what saved our family.
Let's talk.
It was a hard adjustment. Oh, it was awful. But it saved us.
Our guest on the program is Mary Ann Gribben Beckman. The name of the book that we're talking about is When I Was 9 Years Old, a love story book available at Dorrance Publishing. I'll give you the website. We've got it on our website as well, bookstore.dorrancepublishing.com. Products in the basically their bookstore. You'll find the book there and order that. Link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And Mary Ann's website is maryannbeckman.com. And Ann is A-N-N-E, and again, we've got that on our website as well. Talk about when this happened. You mentioned walking out the door and seeing what had happened that day. Talk about that. What happened, and afterwards, how did you deal initially with all the emotions?
I just shut down. And every time anything happened, I would fall apart. I mean, I was nine.
Oh, yes.
You know, it was heartbreaking. I was close to getting hormones. It was just, and there were so many, and one of the things that I don't want to give too much of this away, but one of the things that I learned when I became a teenager, when I was a little older, was that my mother told everyone it was my fault.
Oh.
My mother was, she was a strong / weak person. I don't know how she was, you know, on the one hand, she was a princess. And on the other hand, she was the mother of four, five.
Oh, yes.
And she always kept us together, and she always took great care of us. And it just, she just couldn't handle that. And it wasn't her fault either. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, it was, again, this is the 60s and the 70s. When your parents told you to be home at 5 o'clock, if your ass wasn't there, there were consequences.
Yes, yes.
There's not today. They tell you to F off and they go do whatever they want to do. No, seriously, you know?
Well, oh, yes.
I walked in the door. My mother dropped my, and you know, she put me right on the ground. No question. I never questioned it. It was just the way that it was. That day I was early. So I was the last one to see him and talk to him out on the step. And I always, when I look back on it, I always think that God was very good. I think I actually heard my mother say this once, that I had cleared the front door and didn't see it because it was within seconds.
Oh, yes. Oh.
Go ahead.
I just said, when your mother says, you know, you find this out at a later time, but you were responsible giving you the guilt. Did you ever feel that guilt from her?
Not guilt, because I didn't know that she felt that way.
Yes.
My mother, you know what? My mother never liked me. It's just, you can't like everybody.
Oh, yes.
But I know she loved me. And she had six brothers, and she was always, you know, the center of attention. And then I was born, and she wasn't anymore. And that was really hard for her. And her mother and I were unbelievably close. I never could have had the relationship with my mother that I did with my grandmother. She saved me, too. I mean, she was wonderful.
Well, talk
and,
about,
you know, I have 31st cousins. I'm sorry.
No, that's your grandmother's an interesting person. Talk about that relationship and advice that she gave you that really shaped your life.
The way the story goes, because, of course, I can't remember this, but I heard it enough, was my mother, we lived two blocks from my grandmother. It was really a little neighborhood thing. And they used to go up and help my mother. My mother and I used to go up and help my grandmother clean, which meant I was in a clothes basket in the bottom of the steps and that they were doing their thing. And there was a knock on the door, and my grandmother looked up and saw who it was and screamed. And my mother went running, and it was the bereavement detail, telling them that her son, Edward, had been killed in Saudi Arabia in the service. And they said she was just so overwhelmed. My grandmother loved her children more than her own life. And she walked over, and the clothes basket was there, and she reached down and she picked me up. And people that were around, even though they were young, said I saved her. Not me, Mary Ann, but me, the baby.
Yes.
And they said she rarely put me down. And, you know, the love that she had for him, she always loved him, but she loved me. And we always got along unbelievably. I mean, we rarely had a crossword. She was a huge part of my life. Even when we moved, like the proudest day of my life was the day when I got my license. And I went down to 12th Street, And I knocked on the door. She didn't know I was coming. And I held the keys up and I said, do you want to go for a ride? She was so tickled, she almost jumped out the window. She said to me, oh, kid, we're going to have so much fun.
What a relationship.
And we did.
I'm sure, yes. And that's interesting because you were relying on her. It's almost like she was relying on you, too. What a relationship that you had with your grandmother. You talked before I interrupted you about all the cousins you had. Talk about that and the role of family in coming together and getting through this. How important was that to have family members there?
My grandmother had, including my family, 30 grandchildren. Of the 30, my aunt, me, my sister, Tricia, my cousin Teresa, and I try to think of Colleen too. We were the only ones that bothered with her or went down to see her or, you know, really spent. Most of my older cousins didn't like her at all because she spoke her mind. You know, my position was always, she never told me to do something that I didn't want to, so that was fine. And then, of course, you hear stories like, I can remember one Sunday, I guess maybe I was 6 or 7, she got an itch to go up and see all the rocks up, you know, I forget the name of the place, but it was just a bus trip, take the bus up, go in and see all the rocks and the neat stuff and then go home. We did stuff like that all the time. I never gave her a second's trouble. Why? I was having fun.
That's
what's missing today. That really is what's missing today. People aren't having fun with children.
And I always hate to say, blame it on the internet and phones and screen time and all of that, but that certainly plays a major factor in that, doesn't that? Everybody is consumed with the device they're holding in their hand.
My grandmother, I started work and she was so proud of me. And, you know, I was down there one time and it was something about work. And she said, you girls are going to be sorry. And I said, why, Mom? She said, you're working now? She said, you're always going to work. Things are going to change a lot. And she was absolutely right.
Yes.
Yeah, she really was. And that's what I see more than anything else. I have a great niece. She's actually my niece. She's incredible. She has 3 kids. They're all in swimming, whatever, arts and crafts. I mean, she works. But she's doing such a phenomenal job. And they're just such nice kids. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just love them to death.
Yes.
They're just such nice kids. And it's because of her and my nephew and their grandparents. I mean, they spend time with them. And I think that's the biggest problem in certainly in our country. I don't know the rest of the world, but certainly in our country. How often do you see somebody just walking down the street with a little guy holding his hand?
Yeah, you don't see that often, and you really don't see a lot of young people outside at all. I'm a little older than you, maybe a lot older than you, but kids were outside all the time. I mean, you were outside until it got dark, and people screamed, parents screamed for you to come home. Outside doing things, we often walk in the neighborhood and think, I'm not sure there are any kids that live here. We never see any outside. School buses stop each day and pick people up there. I assume it's kids they're taking to school, but we don't see them outside, you know, running around as we did.
It's sad. I mean, it's actually very, very sad. Your yard doesn't have to be a half an acre to get out there and find something to do.
Well, and
that's my biggest thing.
Well, and that's one of the elements of the book. There's so many, it touched so many emotions in the book by Marianne Gribben Beckman. The book is When I Was 9 Years Old, A Love Story, available at dorenspublishing.com in their bookstore, available, of course, at other places, and a link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Marianne's website is mariannebeckman.com, A-N-N-E, all of that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. What kind of takeaway do you hope people have from reading the book? What do you hope the stories are that maybe resonate with them?
I hope the stories, that the biggest, the blip that I sent you from one of the, somebody had written, and I just hope that people get more out of themselves and into the world and look around and see what's going on. and recognize as somebody. Like, I was very blessed. I had two aunts. But, you know, when things got really bad and I was marked, they went after my mother and my father. I mean, when one went after my mother and one went after my father. You know, don't know how this is happening. Don't care. Has to stop. Because, like, you know, I was showing up with marks on my back. I had a couple black eyes. I had, you know, twice my arm. I had that twist thing. And she was just overwhelmed. And I was her second hand. And there were times when I really resented that. And I, you know, bucked up against it. And then I had a problem. I learned to do what I was supposed to do. And I think that that's the biggest takeaway. I really do hope is that, you know, we'll start hugging each other. Start holding hands. My father always held my hand. No matter where we got, when it was just he and I, whether it was downtown going to lunch, whether we were at the Legion, didn't matter. He always held my hand.
And that little simple act stayed with you. You're talking about it today and all the probably very fun type of activities you had with your father. And that's something that's always stuck in your mind, obviously, is holding the hands and showing the affection that way. It costs nothing. It's very easy to do. And again, we don't see a whole lot of that as much certainly as we should. Time is going by so quickly. The book is an excellent read. It's available right now, When I Was 9 Years Old, A Love Story. We'll give you all the information on our website and Marianne's website, MarianneBeckman.com. They say that time heals all wounds, and I've often wondered if that's actually true. In your case, how did time change your grief, the way you showed your grief?
As you can tell, I can hold my own in a conversation. I can be just as quiet as well. But after my brother was killed, I didn't talk much for a long time. There are very few people who, before I was in my mid-20s, that even knew about my brother. I never talked about him. I certainly never talked to my parents about him. I couldn't. Even knowing everything that I knew, I never confronted my mother. My father could never say his name again, and we weren't allowed to. So it was very, very difficult. And I'm trying to think. I think in the book I detail how when my mother got pregnant after Dan was killed, rather, she got pregnant. And thank God she had a girl. I think if she had had a boy, it would have been difficult. But she had a little girl, my sister Kathleen, who we lost a little while ago. And she changed everything. She really did. She took my father out of himself a lot. My mother was in love again with a baby. Do you know what I mean? Like, it really did change some things, but not enough. And another thing I'll tell you is when people are afraid of change, I'm best at that than anybody. I, you know, change is hard. And I got a good lesson when we moved. And we had always, before my brother was killed, always talk. Around the table. I mean, you know, my sister Trish was 6 months old and she would babble her way in. You know what I mean? Like, my father was very big on that. And when Dan was killed, that stopped. And we moved to Oakford, and one night we were at dinner. And my father came home, and he could be such, he was such a man of many faces. And he said, we all started to eat, and he said, put your forks down. And we all looked at him. And he said, I want to tell you something. Well, he went on this, he wasn't ranting, but he was talking about how he, you know, he's the only man in the neighborhood that goes to work in a suit and a tie, and he takes the train all the way into town, and then he has to see the bums down there, and, you know, these poor World War II vets that had nowhere to go, and then this and this, and people doing this and that and the other thing. And he said, there had been a problem for a little while around our table. My brother would make a joke. He was the only boy then.
Yes.
And my sisters, for some reason, they would start to laugh and milk would shoot out of their noses. You know how little kids are with that?
Exactly. I can see it, yes.
Yeah. And it used to make my father nuts. And this night, he said, no more. I don't want any more of this kind of, I'd like to have a calm dinner. Everybody talking nice to each other. Nothing else. And he's looking at my brother. Oh, yeah, Daddy, no problem, Daddy. Okay, Daddy. Now we all start to eat. And the girls, they couldn't take their eyes off Kevin. And he said to my mother, can I have another piece of meatloaf? Well, he hated meatloaf. We all looked at him like, what? So he said, Marianne, give him the plate. So he goes to get the plate. He turns the fork, tines down, and he starts to dance it across the table, doing The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yes.
And then he stabbed the piece of meatloaf.
Mm.
And milk went everywhere. It was everywhere. It was, and my father never looked up. He never looked up. And, you know, it was just, my mother was hooting. She was laughing so hard because it was just cute. And
yes.
We finally got a little bit back to cute, and it was fun. But that's what made the change, was being able to make the change, because it was all new for all of us, you know, moving out into the country. It was a big deal.
Boy, time is going by so quickly. We'll talk about that move, and that really was beneficial to you. But all new environment out there, what was that like for you? Did that help you deal a little bit better, not being face-to-face with where it actually happened?
No, I hated it.
Oh.
Every second of it.
Oh, okay.
I had gone to school with all my friends from kindergarten to seventh grade. We didn't know this was coming. The van showed up one day and we moved. That's how my parents were. And I got up there and everybody was so different. Not mean or anything like that, just different.
Oh, yes.
Didn't talk about the same things. You wouldn't think, you know, 20 miles from where I live, it could be that different. It was that different. And, you know, I had to start eighth grade. I didn't know anybody. Then I had to go. And all of it turned out to be a good thing for us, all of us. So that's, you know, that's the other side of it.
Yes.
It took me a long time to get used to it. But once I did, boy, I took off and so did the others.
How difficult was it for you at 9 years old to deal with your grief when you did not, it sounds like, have any parental support whatsoever? How did you do that? It sounds like basically on your own.
Well, I didn't. The one time I cried with my mother, she pushed me away. I sat on a step and listened to all these adults coming in sobbing. Nobody talked to me. I later found out it was because my mother told everybody that, you know, it happened because of me. At a certain time, one of the aunts came over and said, "Your brother needs you." And my brother, Kevin, I went up. I was nine. He was six. And for almost 2 years, every night, he slept in my bed because he couldn't sleep in that bed. He just couldn't do it.
Yes.
And again, there's another reason why, you know, the move was such a good deal. That it worked out. He got his own room right next to my room. And, you know, things tended to even out a little bit.
How do you
do? But he had a tough time, too.
It sounds like it. And without a whole lot of support there. Over time, how?
Oh, no, he got a lot of support. No, he got a lot of support.
Oh, he did? It was you that didn't get the support.
Just me, yeah.
Over time, when you... Yeah, I interrupted. Finish that thought.
I can't imagine how I was, you know, being the oldest sometimes is hard. It really is hard.
Yes.
Especially if there's a couple kids. My husband's the oldest of eight. And when we met, one of the first things when we went out that attracted me to him was he had the same kind of stories I did. His mother used to make him, when he was in trouble, he used to have to go out in the mudroom and kneel and pray. Mm. And she better hear those prayers too. He was 8 and 9 years old. I said, "Thank God she never met my mother." That's why I said, "Chris, I would have been kneeling in the mudroom too."
Oh, yes, yeah. Your mom didn't need any more ideas. No. That definitely would have not worked out well. What is your feeling like now when you look back at Dan and you've written about it in the book? Talk about him now, because I'm sure, especially now since you're talking about the book, that he's certainly has to be top of mind awareness frequently in your life.
The first thing I did after I went to get my mom when I got my license was go to the cemetery. And I've gone there all my life. If I have to think about something or talk about something, that's where I get my quiet time, at the cemetery with him. And both my parents are there now with him, but just go to see him. And it's always been a comfort to me. I always felt like he listened. There were occasions in my life when... I'm trying to think of the best way to put it, because, again, I know a lot of people don't believe in this stuff, where I was going a certain way and there was an inevitability of having a problem because of it. And something would happen really weird that I didn't even understand. Like I would say something really off.
Yes.
And, you know, or I wouldn't be at that place, like I was going to be at that place, but then there was a change and I wouldn't. And it always seemed in the long run to save me from a lot of grief or a lot of problems. And I always felt when I got older, when I put them together, because it's happened 5 or 6 times. And when I put them together, I can't help but think that somebody kind of was giving me a little push the other way.
That, yes. Dan was looking out for you. Yes. No, it makes perfect sense. And those happened, and you suddenly start realizing, I don't think these were coincidences, maybe. Maybe there's a message there, and there's something at play more than just happenstance. So it's interesting how we all learn to deal with grief, and we learn so much by what you went through in your experiences. The book is When I Was 9 Years Old, A Love Story. The author is Mary Ann Gribben Beckman. Ann is A-N-N-E. That's important because her website is maryannbeckman.com. All these links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Book available at dorenspublishing.com, products division. That's in basically their bookstore there. Other places as well, you'll find the information when you go to Mary Ann's website. Mary Ann, a pleasure to have you on the program. Great reviews so far with the books. You're touching a lot of people on, as I said before, with different emotional levels with the story that you bring out in When I Was 9 Years Old. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you very much.
It is our pleasure, and I'd like to thank King Pages Press. That's Mary Ann's marketing consultant, results-oriented, making sure your work gets the attention it truly deserves. Mary Ann Gribben Beckman, our guest, the book, When I Was 9 Years Old. Information, of course, on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.